let's get the show going. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, Episode 3, recorded March 18th, 2010. I'm Will Smith. With me, as always, Norman Chan.
Hello.
So, what's going on, Norm? I've been out of the office all week with bronchitis, which has been pretty awesome for me. I'm sure you guys have enjoyed some quiet time without me around.
It's been pretty quiet. I've been holed up in the office here, doing some writing.
Are the other guys making you feel welcome, or are they ostracizing you and leaving you on your own?
I'm the social pariah.
Okay, that's good. That's what
I maintain that I did not give you the bronchitis.
Oh, you totally gave me the bronchitis, dude. You came in with
I didn't have bronchitis. you got bronchitis. Uh-huh. I did not have bronchitis.
Hey, I took the little tiny cough that you had, and I made it better. That's what I do.
The mere sniffles.
Uh-huh. Well, the lesson is don't come to the office with the sniffles. Just work from home that day. It's okay.
Yep.
So let's see. Bunch of good news this week. Lots of stuff happening. GTX 480, we'll talk about a little bit. There's some spec and price rumors for that. Google TV has been kind of leaked by the New York Times. Some more Windows Phone 7 series info. The Nexus One was announced for a whole bunch of new carriers. Xbox 360 is getting mass storage. And a whole lot more on This Is Only a Test. Okay, so let's talk about the GTX 480 spec rumors. What's the story there, Norm?
All right, so we're pretty sure GTX 480 NVIDIA is going to do the big announcement next week at PAX East. Probably, I think the timing is 7 p.m. PST is when the big announcement is supposed to be. Sure if it's a webcast or not.
Very specific rumor.
Yes. Well, that's when they have scheduled a big event.
Oh, the NVIDIA keynote?
There's an NVIDIA keynote that if you care about next generation graphics, you should go. So that's probably when it will be announced. But the actual specs came out on some forums today.
2.1 billion transistors? Is that still the
one? No. These are actually not that specific. It was okay. Pricing. So we know there will probably be two models, the 480 and the 470. 480 is rumored to price at $499, so $500. And the 470 is rumored to price at $349. So a 150 price difference between the two parts. The 470 is supposed to be about 10% faster than the 5750.
Hold on.
5850.
So it's going to be
480. Yes.
The 70.
Both single.
The 470 is going to be slower than a 5870.
Yes.
Wow.
And I think the 480 is going to be, well, it's cheaper. It's 350 as opposed to the 380, 400 that the 5870s still go for right now. And the GTX 480 is supposed to be about 10 to 15% faster. These are all rumors, of course, than ATI's 5870. Here's the big shocker. The big shocker is that the TDPs for both these cards were also leaked, and the GTX 480 supposedly runs 295 watts.
So the TDP is the thermal design profile, and that means about the amount of energy that the vendors are going to have to exhaust from the system, not the energy that it draws. So that means, correct?
Yes.
That's an incredible amount of heat
that is,
to generate.
That is, yes. And that is actually equal to ATI's 5970, which is a dual GPU.
Yeah. Part.
So NVIDIA, I think the difference between a single GPU and a dual GPU is not double TDP, obviously. There's about like a 50 to 70 watt difference. And, rumor again is that NVIDIA will do a dual GPU part for the GTX 480, whatever they call it, 495. So we can only speculate what the TDP for that.
How in the hell? There's no way they can do that. The slots won't give enough power. They'll have to use an external power brick or something like that.
You'll need, I don't know, 1,000 watts PSU.
That seems a little high, but that's crazy. So It's definitely not a power sipper like the 5870. Just to put it in perspective, Intel's new 6-core Gulftown, you know, I'm terrible with model names, as anybody who's listened to any of our podcasts knows, but the new 6-core Intel processor, its TDP is 130 watts. Now, you can't necessarily compare manufacturer to manufacturer because everybody measures things a little bit differently. And on a video card, you have to deal with memory as well as a GPU, whereas the CPU is just, you know, one piece of silicon that has to be cooled. But still, it's a pretty ridiculous, you know, it's kind of GPUs are becoming like the brainiacs of the PC, right? It's like this, you know, an incredible, you know, super needy organ on top of people's heads, you know, I don't know where I'm going. I'm taking cold medicine. That's my excuse. So anything else on the GTX 480 front?
No, that's it. I mean, there was a supposedly leaked picture. It looks like a dual slot GPU, has a bunch of heat pipes sticking out the top. Looks pretty authentic. Nothing too different from what we'd expect.
Oh, well, it looks like we saw at GDC, right? I mean, they were showing the board at GDC.
Yeah, but this one's like the supposedly the final packaging. It looks a little bulkier than the GTX 295. There are, you know, two SLI slots on top, so tri-SLI probably possible with this. And looking at the power ports, I think it's, I can't really tell, but looks like an 8-pin and a 6-pin.
Well, that would make sense. I mean, that means they're looking at about 350. They're inside the PCI Express limits, which I think is 275s and a 50, right? 200. I don't remember. I'll have to look that up. Let's talk about Google TV for a minute. New York Times this morning reported that Google, working with Intel, Logitech, and Sony, is building a set-top box to bring the internet to the living room. I don't really know what this is for. I mean, nobody knows what it's for because nobody's talking about it.
It's to get you ads, you know, to get you Google ads while you're watching TV. The rumor said it was going to be based on the Chrome browser, so it's to get, like, Twitter feeds.
Well, but hold on. The New York Times thing said it was based on Android, that it was running Android. So that's...
They also said Chrome, which doesn't run on Android.
Well, yet.
Yeah, so... It will be something different. These are all rumors, again, speculation. No one from any of the parties has confirmed it, although Wall Street Journal did report the same thing a few weeks ago, that Google was testing out satellite services with some unknown software.
So is this a way for me to watch Hulu and stuff like that with Google ads around it? Is this a free or cheap way?
I totally think it is a way for you to watch Hulu and YouTube on your TV with Google ads. And, you know, maybe... You're watching TV and Twitter feeds. So you're going to get, you know, you're watching Lost, and then you'll have the Twitter feed at the bottom or the Buzz feed at the bottom of the screen with the scrolling comments.
That's kind of interesting. So it's kind of like Bloomberg TV for you know, normal people.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But I don't think the market's ready at all for it. I don't think people want another $200 Atom-based device in their home theater system, if they're going to invest in a Roku box, which is like $80, if they're going to get a Boxy box.
The Roku box is pretty limited, though, I mean, in fairness, right?
Well, yeah, sure, that's streaming. But it's $200 to get functionality. I mean, it's their HTPC.
Interesting. So, I mean, I guess the takeaway I have from this is that you shouldn't read too much into it, because Google's tried a bunch of crazy stuff over the years, including, you know, they buy ads on local TV stations in Saskatchewan or someplace in Canada. They do, and then they resell them to other people. I mean, when I was at Maximum PC 8 or 9 years ago, they bought, it wasn't that long ago probably, but they bought a series of print ads and kind of sublet out little chunks of these print ads. So, I mean, Google's always keen on trying other things. And, I mean, it seems like the set-top box market, they're using a lot of off-the-shelf parts, a lot of off-the-shelf software. And the only thing that really sounded custom, which sounded kind of neat, is Logitech. They tapped Logitech to build a tiny remote with a keyboard on it, is what the rumor is. I mean, what do you think about that, Norm?
Not surprising. A remote with a keyboard on it is nothing new.
Well, but a good remote with a keyboard on it is something new, I think. I mean, I haven't seen that TiVo Premiere remote hands-on, but I'm interested to see.
Yeah, and the Boxy Box remote also has a keyboard. That one is the keyboard on the other side, on the bottom side.
Oh, that's right. It's the flip side keyboard. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess the thing, I don't think there's anything world-changing here. I mean, I think we're taking our first tentative steps into this whole kind of living room internet computer experience. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes.
I mean, do you think it's a best-in-class device?
I don't know what a best in
Android
class
is supposed to be.
I don't know what a best-in-class device in this space looks like. I mean, honestly,
there aren't many. I mean, everything is so different. There is no unified UI. And if it's based in Chrome, then they need to get some new UI designers.
I mean, here's the stuff that I actually Chrome has kind of grown on me as I've used it more. But I mean,
well, it's a web browser, not a for a 15-inch, 24-inch.
Yeah, it's not a 10-foot display. No, that's definitely true. I mean, for me, the things that a device like this needs to have is access to everything. I hate having – the thing that I'm worried about with the Boxy Box especially is that it'll have access to 70% of the stuff that I like to see and not 100%. I don't want to have – I want to be able to buy iTunes content and play it on this thing too. I don't want to have to keep switching inputs to change from Netflix to Apple TV purchase stuff to, Hulu or whatever. I want to have it all in one box. The UI has to be really, really fast so that I never find myself waiting for the box. And then the last thing is that it actually needs to work in a way that normal people can use. So, I don't want to have to sit down with the remote and have a 35-minute lesson teaching my wife how to use the thing when, she can pick up the Apple TV or the Xbox or whatever and use it immediately. So it needs to be really, really hyper intuitive. Anything you'd add?
No. I mean, obviously everything is speculation at this point. No sign for release date. There are plenty of Google products further up the pipeline that we'll probably see before this ever, reaches your living room.
Yeah, like I said, it is super, super early in all of this kind of stuff. So, I think there's a lot of time before anything actually happens and we see I think we're going to see a lot of people throwing stuff up against the wall before we find something that's actually good. So, moving out of the living room and into the airwaves, Nexus One is in the news again this week. We talk about the Nexus One a lot on the show, but I guess it's why is that actually?
It's the flagship Android phone. It is the Android phone that all other Android phones aspire to be, because it's Google's phone.
It's the latest hardware and the latest software and all that stuff. So Nexus One, couple of Nexus newses and a little bit of Android news. We'll glomp it up into one segment. Nexus One was announced for Sprint this week, and it's on sale for AT&T. So they added the extra 3G transceivers needed to make 3G work on AT&T's proprietary network instead of just T-Mobile's. So that means the Nexus One we have, sadly outdated now. Well, fuck beans. We seem to have lost Norm. Wait, they're coming back online at Whiskey headquarters? Norman Chan, are you there?
That was pleasant.
Ah, there you go. I can hear you again.
That was pleasant.
What happened?
Skype dropped the call. It sounded all staticky in the middle of the sentence, and then it dropped.
That is exactly what I got. So we were talking about the Nexus, AT&T, and Sprint. I don't know if it's available on Sprint yet, but it's definitely available on AT&T.
Not available on Sprint yet. They just announced it, which means they have the big four carriers. They have T-Mobile, AT&T, Sprint, and Verizon at least committed, but no actual dates for either Sprint or Verizon yet. The AT&T model, as I was saying before, it's a separate SKU. When you go to buy it, it says buy the one that's compatible with AT&T, which doesn't mean that that one will work with T-Mobile. I don't know. I mean, it would be surprising. If that one actually did work with T-Mobile, then I don't know why they still offer the T-Mobile SKU.
It should work with – it'll at least work with T-Mobile Edge. I'm trying to think if I've never tried to put a T-Mobile SIM in an iPhone before. But I believe that the T-Mobile users get full 3G with a 3GS or a 3G on T-Mobile when they've jailbroken their phone. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's the this is exciting mainly because more people get to have the Nexus One, even though it's not selling particularly well.
No, they really need more people to get onto it. I think the early estimates reports were that in the past 74 days since launch, Nexus One has been out for a couple months already. So it's only sold like 135,000 units.
Compared to the pre plus?
I don't think they have pre numbers, but Apple in that same time frame sold 1 million units. Hmm. And the Droid was much better.
Yeah, well, the Droid, there's a big marketing campaign. I mean, sitting at home on the couch, sniffling and drinking chicken noodle soup, I watched a lot of daytime TV. There are a lot of Droid ads on every single day.
I mean, it's advertising. It's availability. You can buy a Droid in stores. You can get it as an upgrade. You cannot do that with Nexus One. You have to buy it through Google. They don't advertise it at all. I mean, you see some web ads, but there are no TV ads.
Yeah, there's no TV spots for it.
People just don't know about it, and it's on T-Mobile. It's on the crappiest network.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, what do you think the strategy is with the Nexus One? Is it just to make a reference design that everybody else can rip off, or is it? I mean, is it something for us, for the hardcore, for the power users, and for the enthusiasts who understand that, you know, whether you pay $500 for a phone now or $2,000 later, you're still going to pay a lot for your phone.
I don't know. It's.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see.
There are other phones coming out that are as powerful as the Nexus One.
Yeah. So and then the other thing that's interesting that came out this week is some Froyo information. Froyo is the next major release of Android. I suppose it's short for frozen yogurt because the Android folks tend to name their releases after delectable treats. What do you think about Froyo? What's the word?
Actually, there isn't a lot of concrete information. It's a lot of speculation. But it's built on based on the new Linux kernel, which is a little faster.
Okay.
And functionally, I think they're going to add a lot of just other gesture support and
more multi-touch.
Multi-touch stuff, Buzz widget integration. Mm.
I had heard rumors that there'd be a faster JIT compiler so that your Android apps would actually run better, the third-party apps. So, okay. I mean, I guess that's the Android Minute for this week. Anything else on the Android front before we sign off? Okay, so the next thing we're going to talk about this week is the Xbox 360 and the rumored USB mass storage upgrade. What's the story, Norm?
So these are actually leaked plans. But right now, you know, with Xbox 360, you can plug a USB key in there, and it will play, you know, it will view photos and play media. So that's fine. But what it won't do is you can't use that as a hard drive.
It's not protected, right? You can't use it for downloaded files or save games, right?
Exactly. So the leak specs say that there will be an update for 360 where you can plug and you can format it. So it will be a hard drive. So instead of having to replace your hard drive, you can just plug in a USB hard drive. The limitation is that it's only up to 16 gigs, which is plenty for save games, but not nearly enough, you know, for a lot of preloading stuff. I mean, the original Xbox came out with 20 gigs.
I know they said that you could save avatar clothes on there, but did they say anything about your actual Xbox profile?
I'm not sure about the actual Xbox profile. But I think saving would be enough. I mean, I don't see people plugging in big, you know, Western Digital passports on there. It's going to be USB keys, and it's going to be a way to get around having to do the, you know, paying the memory card.
Well, yeah, and I mean, since you still can't keep your profile on more than one Xbox at a time, you know, I mean, this is one of the things that's always annoyed me about Xbox Live. You know, with Steam, if I have two computers, I sign into one, the other one gets kicked off, so I can always, you know, I don't have to carry around some sort of, you know, chit with me, right? With Xbox Live, you actually have to carry the profile around with you. You can't just sign in and sign out. So if I wanted to log into another Xbox, like one at work or one in my bedroom or something, I have to actually take a memory card, take it out of the Xbox in the living room, carry it into the Xbox in the bedroom, plug it in, turn the Xbox on. It's a real drag. Hopefully this will help that, because I mean, if I can just save it on a USB key on my keychain, that's much better than having to do it on a 512 meg memory card. Next topic, piracy. You know, what do you think of when you hear the word pirate, Norm?
I think of
Blackbeard, red jacket. Beard, puffy shirt.
Puffy shirt.
You know, I always think of like the, you know, Long John Silver, the kind of scurvy guy with bad teeth and maybe a wooden leg, an eye patch, and a parrot.
Captain Morgan.
No, Captain Morgan's a little too clean for the pirate. I mean, I think that piratical days a little grittier than we probably see depicted, even in things like Pirates of the Caribbean and, you know, the relatively more modern, super gritty pirate movie. But I've heard that the people who fight piracy think that the word pirate is a little too sexy for theft. What's the story?
Oh, definitely. So at a new study released by the head of the International Actors Federation said that piracy should be relabeled, because I think the pirates have kind of owned that now. I mean, with the Pirate Bay, kind of obvious, right?
Right, the Pirate Bay, the Pirate Party.
They are proud pirates.
Right, it's a lot of sexy pirate wenches rather than the kind of one-legged old men with no teeth.
It is, right. So every person who downloads a movie thinks of themselves as Johnny Depp. They're fighting the man, right? So
everybody loves. I mean, who do you love fighting more than the man? Tell me one person.
I don't know.
I love fighting the man. I mean, yeah. That's what I'm here for. So yeah, I mean, they have a point. I think. Okay, go on. Sorry, I interrupt.
So they want to change the phrase, right? Change the phrase and call it theft. They want to make the, you know, you are a criminal, not a pirate.
Hmm. Well, pirates are criminals. I mean, anybody who's been attacked by Somali pirates would agree. Okay. I think this is a little goofy, but I mean, whatever. So what's the takeaway on this? Are they going to start sending nice letters out to people who call pirates and ask them to call them thieves instead?
I don't think it's a call to arms to just change their rhetoric. It's a PR thing.
Oh boy, nothing better than a good PR thing for a Thursday afternoon. Okay, well, maybe we've talked about this enough. Post in the comments what you think. Are pirates one-legged old men with no teeth and a parrot, or saucy wenches, you know, with one leg and no teeth and a wooden leg? That kind of didn't go where I wanted it to go, but... let's say we have some reader questions this week. This is very exciting. Brandon Williams says, one of my biggest gripes this decade is the MP3 and AAC infection caused by digital download services. Audio compression made sense back when hard drive capacity was a couple of gigabytes, but now I'm concerned that music distributors are senselessly downgrading music quality while consumers are buying that downgraded audio because they don't know better. I refuse to buy music from digital distributors unless they offer a lossless audio service, which is usually sold at a premium, if at all. Lossless audio shouldn't be a premium service. It should be a standard for digital download services. With codecs like FLAC, it isn't even a huge strain on file space or bandwidth to get the best quality music possible. I'd love to hear you bring up the subject in your podcast and get the word out, Brandon Williams. What do you think about FLAC, Norm?
I don't use FLAC. I mean, it's still significantly more disk space. I can't tell the difference between 256K bitrate,
uh-huh,
you know, Vero bitrate, VBR, and lossless.
We actually tested it at Maximum PC a couple of different times, and the upshot is that most people can't tell the difference between high bitrate MP3 that's encoded VBR with a good codec like LAME, and lossless or WAV files, even uncompressed files. You know, so I definitely see where you're coming from, Brandon. And if I had a $30,000 stereo, I would probably be more concerned. It does kind of gall me that I've gone from buying CDs, which are essentially lossless, to compressed MP3s. On the other hand, I can mash the button on Amazon MP3 and have a song in about 5 minutes versus, you know, waiting overnight or 2 or 3 days and then having to rip it and make sure that the ID3 tags are right and all that. It's kind of a big hassle. The other big problem with lossless codecs is the compression. Like, it's not supported by a lot of players. I mean, I know that iPhone only plays Apple's lossless codec, which absolutely nothing else supports. FLAC is really lightly supported outside of some kind of niche MP3 players and things like Arcos players and Cowan players and things like that. So, and WMA lossless has the same exact problem that Apple lossless does. It's just not that popular. So it's difficult to recommend people rip that. What I really wish we could get is something that would let me do FLAC in the house, you know, streaming to squeeze boxes or Sonos devices or whatever. And that would automatically kind of transparently convert that FLAC to MP3 for the software that doesn't speak MP3, like iTunes and the Zune software and all that.
So you want, you know, transcoding, live transcoding from a server.
I want transparent transcoding, though. I don't want to have to worry about it. That's the big problem.
Yeah,
I
sure.
Have.
Yeah. So if something runs in the background, that's just software and disk space. You know, that's like the lowest amount of processing power. An Atom processor can do that. I would like services that sell MP3s right now to offer a FLAC option, maybe in the future. Maybe you download the MP3 right now, and in the future, if another codec comes out that's better, you know, then you can future-proof your purchase.
Well, I mean, when I bought, I think when I bought the Radiohead and Rainbow's track, you know, they had not, it may have been that, or it may have been a Nine Inch Nails thing. They actually had an option to download FLAC as well for like a buck more. I totally paid the buck. Those FLAC files have been sitting on my hard drive for 2 years now. So, you know, not that useful. Okay, so the next question comes from DCPC10, a forum user, who says, I'm not looking to buy a new TV anytime soon. I still love my 32-inch Aquos. But I've been wondering, what are the real differences between an LCD and LED screen? LED technology is still relatively new, isn't it? Or am I behind? Not sure. So there were a lot of responses. Most of them were pretty close or mostly right, but there were some nuances that we want to add. The difference is in the backlight, not the actual screen technology. The way LCD screens work is by shooting light through a kind of screen, and that screen has these little
crystals.
Yeah, the LCD crystals arranged in a grid, and the crystals turn on and off based on the color that you want to show. So, for example, the red crystals will turn on, and the blue and the green crystal will turn off when you want to show a red pixel, and on down the line. So what happens is there's a great big – it used to be a cold cathode fluorescent tube behind that grid that would shine light through it, and it would block – you know, if you wanted to show black, then they'd block all of the light. If you wanted to show white, then they'd open up all the way, and all the light would come through. So what's happened now is people are replacing those cold cathode fluorescents, which are bad for a couple of reasons. They have mercury, and they use a lot of power and, you know, all sorts of other stuff, with an array of LED lights, which are light-emitting diodes. They're you know, just basically little circuits, and when they're energized, then they release a certain color of light, typically white in this case. So what
very bright, very low power.
Exactly, and very cool as well. So very it's they're low power more in that they're efficient than that they don't you know, don't use a lot of electricity. Cold cathodes, on the other hand, generate a lot of waste heat, which makes your room hot and, you know, makes it cost more to run your TV and stuff like that. The neat thing about the LED backlit screens is, depending on the TV, like on laptops and things like that, they're not really doing this a whole lot yet, I don't think. But
I don't think they're doing it at all. It's just, I mean, for most laptops, it's the light is on all at once.
Right, the light is on or the light is off. However, on larger TVs, what they're able to do is dim individual sections of the screen to make the blacks look better. So on a backlit LCD, even when the pixels are all the way closed, especially on inexpensive LCDs, then some light will still leak through. So that makes these kind of gray patches or lighter patches and darker patches on the screen, which looks bad. With an LED, what they'll do is actually turn off the lights behind the places that are supposed to be black on the screen, and you end up with a much, much better looking black pictures than you normally would get. I know Samsung does that on their higher end LCD TVs. A lot of other places do too. So while we're talking about this, we'll talk about the other two technologies that are happening right now. One is plasma. Plasma's been around for a long time, but it's gotten pretty good in the last couple of years. Panasonic especially does a lot of plasmas. I think Samsung does as well, and I'm not sure if they're doing it this year. LG also does plasma. Plasma's neat because the actual cell, there's no backlight. The cell on the grid actually creates the light as well as the color. So you end up with much better blacks, and they actually run at really, really high frame rates compared to plasmas. LCDs. Which typically only run at, you know, 60, 120, 240 hertz. The third thing is OLED, which we're seeing mostly on small stuff now because it's hard for them to manufacture really big. What OLED is an organic light emitting diode, and there's a couple of different kinds. We don't need to get into that. What they do is they work the same way plasmas do, kind of, but are much more efficient. So you apply a little bit of current to the OLED, and it makes the light and the color at the same time. You get something very efficient. So the Nexus One screen is an OLED screen, and there's a bunch of others out there as well. The Zune HD screen is an OLED screen.
Once notebooks go OLED, you're not going to be able to get that Apple logo in the back of the screen.
Oh, Apple will put a light in the back. Don't worry.
Such a waste.
Well, one little LED will light it up. I mean, it's fine. See, I mean, so that's a good point. That's how the Apple light works on the back of Apple laptops. Is the it's just a cutout, and it shows you the back of the backlight.
You'll notice. I mean, that was such a good design because it's not any extra energy. The light is already there. They just did a stencil so they could make it look cooler.
Well, I'm sure they'll come up with some new and innovative way to look cool. That's what Apple does, after all, right?
So the other big phone news this week, Mix 10 was happened earlier this week. I think it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That's Microsoft's its own developer conference in Las Vegas, and this is where they promised tons of new information about Windows Phone Series 7, which they announced a month ago. And they delivered a ton of new information. Windows Phone Series 7, they announced the marketplace. So like the iPhone, it has its own app store. It's called the Windows Marketplace, and they released the SDK for developers. So it's actually free. You don't have to pay for the iPhone, you have to pay to develop. But if you're running Windows machine, you can get Visual Basic and you can download the SDK and start building your own Windows Phone Series 7 apps if you know how to program on the Silverlight platform or XNA, which is their gaming platform.
So then the other stuff they talked about too is it's going to sync with the Zune. The apps are going to sync with the Zune software on PC. So that means Mac users are out of luck, right?
Completely out of luck. Mac developers out of luck. Mac users out of luck. The Zune software will be the equivalent of iTunes, but of course there is no Zune software on Mac. You'll be able to browse the App Store and stuff, all that jazz. But the big thing for developers is that now it's the walled garden again. They have to go through a Microsoft approval process. All the apps have to be approved, and Microsoft has the ability to remove the approval if they don't like your app after the fact. Remotely, they can turn it off.
Oh, that's not cool.
It's not very pleasant.
So basically, it's like iPhone 2009 edition, is what it kind of sounds like, with a texty interface, huh? I mean, what do you think? I mean, are you excited about this still? Are you? I mean, do we have to have a walled garden to have a good App Store experience? Is that the lesson here?
Not at all, but it's one of those things that I think they feel is necessary because of consumers. I don't know anyone who knew how to download an app for Windows Mobile 6.5, configure it in Windows, and then port it over to their phone.
Usually in Windows Mobile 6.5, it was as easy as going to a website that had the app hosted, usually some third-party site, clicking the download link, and it would say, hey, do you want to install this? It's really easy. You just finding it was the hard part, not installing.
Finding it, and I guess, in the best of all possible worlds, they would have both options. You would be able to buy it from the marketplace and have that certified, and then you would also be able to get your own apps and tweak.
Well,
but
that's the way Android works.
That is the way Android works, and people have been happy with that. But there won't even be memory card support on Windows Mobile Phone or Windows Phone 7 Series.
Wow!
In the hardware spec, no removable SD card. There might be a micro SD card, below the battery, but users cannot access it. And I think they're just requiring all the handset makers just to include enough flash memory.
Well, I do kind of like that. I mean, that's one of the things that kind of bums me about it, about the pre and the Android phones, is that usually they come with a really small 4 gigabyte micro SD card, and so then you just spent $400 or $500 on a phone. You have to trot down to the store and spend another couple hundred bucks on a big micro SD card. So,
I mean, having that minimum requirement is great, but I there's no reason why they couldn't have had the SD card support. I don't think it's a security thing. I don't know. I mean, the other hardware specs, all Windows Mobile or all Windows Phone 7 Series models will have an 800 by 480 screen at launch.
Wow.
They will all have, comparable CPUs, about their ARM CPUs, 1 gigahertz ARM CPUs, probably the A9.
Or Snapdragon,
Snapdragon. And they'll all have dedicated GPUs because they want to be able to run DirectX 9.
So, I mean, does that mean good news for NVIDIA, I guess? Or did they not require that level of GPU?
I don't know who's developing that GPU. I don't think iPhone doesn't use NVIDIA's chip. And the only thing that uses NVIDIA is the Tegra.
The Tegra, the Zune HD. So far, yeah.
Yeah, and the Zune HD won't even be able to play the apps. You can't use your Zune HD to download Windows Phone 7 Series apps. You will have to get a unannounced Zune HD 2.
Oh, wow. So the Zune's been out for, 6 months now, and it's already obsolete?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and what's worse, the HTC HD 2, which isn't even out yet, it's coming out next week for T-Mobile, that's already obsolete. And that will be the best Windows Mobile 6.5 phone you can ever get, you'll ever be able to get, and that's it. You won't be able to use Windows Phone 7 Series on it.
Wow. So the end of Windows Mobile 6. I mean, I remember the old Outlook Today page at the beginning of Windows Mobile. I mean, I remember the first time I connected to email over the internet. I was really excited about that. It was all on a Windows Mobile phone. So thanks, Windows Mobile. Here at Tested, we salute you and wish you a Viking funeral. Maybe we'll take some Windows Mobile phones and send them out into the bay on fire. Okay, so that wraps it up for us this week. For Norman Chan, I'm Will Smith. Before I go, we're on Zune now, so you can, if you're on the Zune store, you can download us there. Just search for This Is Only a Test. We're in the technology section under gadgets because that's one of the options we had, unfortunately. We're on iTunes. If you like us, please write a review on iTunes. Tell your friends. Twitter about us. Post us on Facebook. Do whatever you can. We're just trying to let everybody know that we're out there and just trying to get people to listen to what we're saying. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Actually, I'm just going to cut that part out entirely. You'll never know. Oh.